This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. And today we continue our series of conversations with the candidates for Massachusetts governor with Dr. Don Berwick. He's a pediatrician from Newton and a world-recognized healthcare policy expert.
Berwick has taught at Harvard Medical School and the Harvard School of Public Health. He was a vice president at Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. He also helped create and lead the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, a nonprofit think tank based in Cambridge.
And most recently, Berwick led the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. He resigned in late 2011 after Republican lawmakers threatened to block his confirmation hearing. Dr. Berwick joins us now to talk about his bid for governor. Don Berwick, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me again, Sasha.
And listeners, call us or write to us online with your questions for Don Berwick. Let us know what you want us to ask him or call us at 1-800-423-8255 and ask him yourself. This is an opportunity for you to talk directly with the candidate and let him know what you want the next governor to focus on and what issues matter to you. Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Don Berwick, I want to start with the battle over your confirmation. You were appointed in a recess appointment when Congress was out of session. Republicans were very disgruntled about that when your appointment was expiring. It was clear that they would not support a nomination if Obama tried to proceed with it. You basically resigned. So given that experience, what makes you want to be part of elective government, elective politics at all?
Well, that noise was background noise for me in Washington, Sasha. The Republicans did oppose me viciously, and I must say, my opinion, a bit unfairly. They misquoted me repeatedly. But actually, that faded to the background. What I noticed was the opportunity. It was such a privilege to go to Washington to work for this president, to be put in charge of the largest agency in federal government, $820 billion of expenditure, 5,500 people.
And I think you said it's the best job you've ever had, even
it, by far. I mean, I have had great jobs, and I don't want to diss any of the others then. But I mean, look what I got to do. I got to go to Washington to work for our entire country, to help protect the interests of 100 million Americans, children, the elders, people with disabilities, people at the margins. Every day went going to work to figure out how to help them more and make healthcare better. And my whole career for 30 years had been about improvement of healthcare, and this allowed me to bring that to a scale.
And we should note that although I think many people probably aren't quite sure what CMS does, it insures, was it one out of every three Americans, a budget bigger than the Pentagon?
That's right.
So a very significant agency.
100 million people, one out of three Americans. And it also is the lead agency for implementation of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. So my job was in large measure to make sure that that law got implemented, and we translated the statute into rulemaking.
After you left the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, was there a moment, a single moment, when you decided you wanted to run for governor? I know it was a process, but what finally pushed you to do it?
Well, I came home enthralled with the experience I had had there, these wonderful public servants I got to work with, going out and meeting people all over the nation, but a little worried about our nation's commitment to the moral test of government, the ability to help people who really need help, commitment to each other, you know, a public policy that really values communities. We're so fractured in such pieces, and it's not going to work that way. We can't solve big problems separately. It has to be together. And I know we can do it. I mean, my whole career has been based on problem solving at a very high level. So I came back not sure what to do, but really convinced I wanted to do what I could to help restore our country's faith in our ability to solve large problems. I come back to the state, open my eyes here, and look at this state. Look at what we've done. You know, the first state to make healthcare a human right in America, 5 years ahead of Obamacare, we did it. We're the state that said you can marry the person you love. We're a state that feels like we're committed to each other. We're a state that's had very progressive energy policy. We are already almost leading the nation. And for me, that's important for Massachusetts. I love this state and the 6 million people here. I want to do everything I can for them. But the country needs an example. It needs a beacon of success. I looked around at possibilities, and I thought of the governorship. I talked to former governors, to people in the political arena, to my friends and family, of course. And the more I talk, the more promise I see that to really continue to do the work to make this state an example of success for the progressive policies that I care about. I just got excited about it.
after, I'm trying to think of the exact timing of this. I'm going to look, flip through and find a date here. I think it was when you were leaving CMS. There was a New York Times story that quoted you as saying that government is more complex than I had realized. And you have said that when you considered running for governor, one of the questions you kept asking key political players was, what is the job like? And that makes me imagine that someone hearing that, you know, might think, are you really veteran enough in politics? Are you ready for the rough and tumble, for how complex it is? Do you feel like you're fully prepared for what would face you if you became elected governor?
Not just prepared, but excited. I mean, remember, for 30 years, Sasha, I've worked on improving very large systems, entire nations, multiple nations around the world, every state in the union, thinking about, in my case, largely how to make health and healthcare better. That's not a solo act. That's a team sport. And what you have to do that is get people around a table to work together who aren't used to working together, who may not even like each other. That's how you solve big problems. You get people together and you say, you know, in the center of this space is a patient and a family, and they need us, and we have to put aside our small-minded squabbles and start to realize meeting needs is at the core. That's what I did in every step of my career. That's what I did in Washington. And I'll tell you, working in Washington, trying to get agencies to work together, it really worked. We had the Centers for Disease Control and National Institutes of Health and HRSA and the Labor Department around the table solving very big problems. I love to do that. And I think the complexity is exciting. In this state, think about it. Think about a table at this state where all the agencies gather around the child and say, how are we going to help you? Gather around the student and say, how are we going to make you successful? Gather around the person who's scared they're going to lose your job and say, how are we going to provide security. That's my wheelhouse, and I love it.
I'm talking with Dr. Don Berwick. He is a Democratic candidate for governor of Massachusetts. He's also a well-known health policy expert and a pediatrician. If you have questions for him, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Don, we've been doing what we've been calling sort of brief lightning rounds with some of our candidates to get a sense of policies. And I want to ask you about some of those, and particularly because I know that we were looking at your website earlier today, which is still coming together. There aren't too many specifics yet about issues. And, of course, the campaign is still a year away. So I want to ask you about some very specific ones and then dig deeper into other ones. On education, do you support lifting the cap on charter schools?
I'm in favor of charter schools. I think we have to do it judiciously. I don't want to bleed resources from the public sector, but charter schools are a laboratory environment in which we can really encourage innovation. And improvement is all about innovation. We need to foster settings in which people try pretty edgy things under safe conditions that we can learn from. That doesn't only have to happen in charter schools. That can happen and does happen in the mainstream school systems, and I would totally support that. In-district charters are a very exciting idea, but I think we need all the innovation we can get. In my work in healthcare and other sectors through the decades, it's the innovation, the new ideas, what comes in that breaks open the possibilities where you suddenly realize we can do far better than we ever thought before. And I think that'll be true in education as well.
So you support charter schools. Would you want to limit charter schools? Would you keep the cap?
I would not keep the cap. I would raise the cap at least. But again, this is partly a community by community issue. I would want to understand at each community level what the consequences of changing the proportion of charters is. I do think it's crucial that the charters operate under very strict guidance and rules. They can't skim. They have to really take the same population of students that are benefiting from the mainstream system. I also would insist that charters be a learning environment. I don't want the innovations to stay bottled up in the charter system, and I do not think education to become a for-profit enterprise. I think education is inherently not-for-profit, and I would struggle hard to keep it that way.
Another education-related question. Do you support legislation that would raise the dropout age from 16 to 18?
I would have to look at that. It's not something I've studied in detail. I think staying in school is a really good idea, but I think the more important idea in our education system is to link it more tightly to the job market and to businesses. There are really exciting experiments in the state, but also around the country, in which the elementary and secondary education system develops relationships with businesses, so kids are actually being prepared while they're learning the academic subjects. They're also learning things about their future jobs. I must say, I've seen the labor unions in this state be thrilling in what they're doing in apprenticeship and job training programs. I visited with the building trades a couple weeks ago with the carpenters union and the painters and the sheet metal workers, and you should go see their apprentice programs. They're amazing.
These are for kids who may not want to go to college or really be equipped to go to college,
or maybe going to college but also want to get into a trade. And they have special programs for kids at risk. They've had programs a program called Helmets to Hard Hats, which helps returning veterans, but they'll also reach into schools, into communities where there are kids at risk in the program's called Pathways Program, and they take kids at risk and they get them out of trouble and back into the job market and into a learning system where they really can thrive. We need thinking that way in our education system.
So on job growth, we have a caller who has a question for you about that, and this is Larry calling from East Boston. So Larry, what is your question for Don Berwick, one of the candidates for governor?
Hi, Dr. Berwick. I was concerned about, I'm intrigued about some of your proposals, but what you said about, what you hinted at about jobs kind of pricked my ears, because I am of the opinion that given the fact that so much money comes from the federal government and the situation there is so bad, it seems to me that anybody on the state or even local level is really, it will be very challenged to deal with the situation in a meaningful way, given those constraints. And I'm hoping that you have some concrete proposals to put up.
Larry, do you mean proposals about job creation?
Yes, in the state of Massachusetts.
Sure.
To counter my doubts and skepticism.
So, Larry, let me sort of pose that question a slightly different way. So, Dr. Berwick, if you were elected governor, what's the first thing you would do to spur job growth?
Well, first, let me say the policies that I'll be putting out on job growth and others are going to be on the website, which is building out right now. In fact, we're launching today, berwickforgovernor.com, so you can see a lot more details there as we build it out. In order to have jobs, you have to have attractive communities. It's community development leads to jobs, and that means all sectors of a community, when they begin to work on what makes a community attractive to be in. If you have a place where people want to be, people go there. And if people go there, jobs go there and businesses go there. And that core idea of building strong communities, to me, is central. I think we need direct investment in the kind of apprenticeship opportunities that I was just talking about and linking schools closer to businesses. And all of the job development research that I've been able to do points back to the education system as key to developing a workforce fit for the future. You know, there are jobs that go unfilled in this state because we're not preparing kids for the 21st century economy, and we need to work very hard on that. I think part of it is restoring money to the pockets of workers. The workers' incomes have not gone up at all in real terms in the past decade. It's all gone to health care. And there's actually a very important relationship between health care reform, which this state has to accomplish, and actually getting money back into the pockets of workers so they can become consumers. Consumers generate business. Business generates jobs.
Don Berwick, you have talked a lot about your experience, of course, with health care policy. And there have been some people that have said, is that too narrow a platform? Could you be pigeonholed? And you've really turned that around in a very nice way and said, think about all the ways that health care ties into every other part of life, education and transportation. Could you give us one example of how some of your experience in trying to fix the healthcare system, you feel that you could apply to fixing government?
Can I give two?
Sure, please.
Yeah, well, first, just from the medical point of view, I mean, any pediatrician like me, I've took care of kids for 20 years, you see an asthmatic child, let's say, coming in and wheezing, odds are the reason that kid's in trouble doesn't have much to do with the medicines they're on, has to do with the house they're living in and the environmental threats around them. Fear and stress in society, any pediatrician who's done practice like I have knows you're working at always on families and communities and development. So health for me is a big picture idea. It's not a narrow one.
This reminds me of this legal medical partnership that one of the Boston hospitals have, where they realize, as you are saying, oftentimes health problems are rooted in legal problems, like a heating system that's not working or an apartment filled with mold, and you need a lawyer, not a doctor.
And I can show you individual children I've taken care of and families where that's absolutely true. We can't have health until we cure poverty. We can't have health until we fix transportation and housing and environments and the energy regime. The other thing about me that I'm explaining on the campaign trail is, if I had to give one word that describes my career to date, 30 years, it's improver. In fact, what I did when I got interested in why things were going wrong in healthcare was I left healthcare. I went and studied NASA and manufacturers and hotel chains and businesses and Bell Laboratories. I wanted to ask the question, how do things in general get reliable? And my whole career really has been built around the improvement of quality in all sectors. I've worked across many sectors, not just healthcare. And I want to bring that to government. I did at CMS, and it worked like a charm. It was a wonderful experience there to bring modern quality thinking into a federal agency.
We have another caller who has a question that deals with how you would deal with the state budget. And this is Jim calling from Randolph. And Jim, what is your question for Dr. Don Berwick, with the Democratic candidate for governor?
Good afternoon, Doctor. My question was, if I'm a state agency, I'm provided $100 a year for my budget. I come well under that. Say I spend $80. It's more often than not, agencies have to spend up to that $100 in order to get that same budget for next year. So essentially, you have agencies spending money on items that they really don't need just to ensure that their budget is at the same level next year. How could we celebrate the tactic managers use to come in below the budgets without being penalized the next year?
Yeah, what a great question. I mean, isn't it silly? That's not how you'd run a sound business, nor is that how government should run. I want to bring sound business management sense, the kind of improvement work that I've worked on for my whole career, right into the core of government. And what the kind of nonsense you just described, that has to end. Waste is not tolerable. And the first place this Commonwealth needs to find revenue is in the reduction of waste in government. And I'm not glib about that. It means enlisting the workforce to understand what they do that doesn't help anybody and that we can give them permission to stop doing so we can focus on the needs of citizens as customers. That's a crucial idea. But we need healthcare has to run with the patient in mind as the customer, and the customer is always right. Government has to run with the citizen in mind, and the citizen is the customer, and the citizen's right. And I would, as governor, strongly invest in that sense of duty and responsibility in the state workforce, that person that you're helping today pays your salary, they're your customer, and we need to improve every way, every day. That's the message I brought again to CMS in the federal structure. And I must say, the staff, the 5,500 people who work for me, they welcomed it. I it was such an inspiring thing to see these people rally around the idea that we serve and we serve well.
Don Berwick, your work at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement was all about innovation and change and new ideas. And government is widely perceived as the opposite of that, often justifiably. How do you think you would adapt to that very different culture and climate if you became governor?
All improvement is change. Not all change is improvement, but all improvement is change. You're exactly right, Sasha. When we reach a problem, say in healthcare, like people are getting infections that they shouldn't get or they're waiting too long, you go search the world for somebody that solved the problem. You find them, you bring them in, and you help them teach you what they know, and you adapt it locally. That works fine. That works in all sectors. It works in education. It works in transportation. It would work in government. That would be my theme as governor. Search the world. There are answers out there, and bring them in. Help us learn from each other and from anywhere we can get good ideas. You also need a leader, a governor, who fosters risk-taking. People are a little shy in government about saying, well, really? Try something new? Should I really do that? And my answer is absolutely yes. You're smart. Let's figure this out. The one thing we know is if you keep doing it the way you've always done it, you'll get the same result. That's not for the future.
Don, several years ago, or actually continuing to this day, your critics really have a field day with some comments you had made about England's National Health Service. You had made a remark that said that any just healthcare system has to redistribute some wealth from richer to poorer. And that, of course, has let people label you sort of someone who favors socialized medicine and rationing. Now that you are running, do you feel that that was an experience that taught you to be more careful about how you word things, or would you word it exactly the same way?
I'd say exactly the same thing. I said what I thought, and I'll say what I think throughout this campaign. In the British National Health Service, what happened there was they were in trouble. In the late 1990s, they had waiting times through the ceiling. Service was deteriorating. They were poor in their cardiovascular outcomes. The Prime Minister asked me to come to England part-time to work with him to help make the NHS better, and I worked very hard at it. The speech I gave that the Republicans quoted was a speech in which I offered them 10 ideas for change, and they quoted the one line which I said, bravo, you now have universal coverage. It really was frustrating. On the redistribution of wealth, just take one deep breath for a moment. All I said was, it is true that sick people tend to be poorer, and poor people tend to be sicker. Now, if we're going to make healthcare a human right, and I believe healthcare is a human right and ought to be in our nation and in the world, that means that if sick people are poorer and poor people are sicker, and we're going to make sure that sick people get help, we are going to take resources from people who are wealthier and out of compassion and morality, make sure those resources get in the form of healthcare to people who are sick. It's just logic. It's not socialism. It's having a brain.
As we've talked to the gubernatorial candidates, we've tried to build in a little time to give you a chance to talk about yourself personally. And one of the little things we found out about you that intrigued us is that apparently you have four kids, right?
I do.
And you used to take each of your kids on a trip with you each year? Was this one trip per kid? Take them one-on-one? What kind of places did you take them?
It was wonderful. I mean, I guess if you want to know what that means about me, it's how important my family is to me. I'm deeply blessed with a wonderful wife who's taught me so much, and four kids that I absolutely love. They're amazing. Four different people. And yes, when they were young and they're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I traveled a lot around the world, and I said each kid gets a trip a year to me, and I frankly didn't apologize for taking them out of school to do it. I brought my third child, my daughter, and I went to Hawaii once and climbed a volcano. She'll never ever forget that. I remember walking the streets of Amsterdam with one of my sons and driving through Nairobi, Africa with both of my sons. These are wonderful moments of family connectedness, and I wouldn't give those up for a minute.
We also read a little curiosity, which is that at some point somewhere you said you're more of an auditory learner. You're like hearing it better than reading it. And it made me think in the healthcare world, it's so paper heavy, reports and memos. And that seems like a challenge given your business that you'd rather hear than read. You can't really get the CMS report on book on tape, I don't think.
if you've ever read tried to read a medical record, you understand the problem. it's just the way I learn. I think it's part of medical training. You know, when you're in the room, the best thing to do is say nothing and just listen, because the patient will tell you what's really there. They'll give you the diagnosis. They'll help you help. And a doctor who's learned the ropes is going to sit there and just really listen really carefully, tune into another human being. I believe that's true of an executive and leader as well. Nothing beats listening.
Dr. Don Berwick is a Democratic candidate for governor of Massachusetts. He's also a pediatrician and a very well-known health policy expert. Dr. Berwick, thanks for coming into the studio.
It's a pleasure, Sasha. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, the Sox take a 2-1 lead in the ALCS. Only a game's Bill Littlefield joins us in a minute. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.